Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, is Ethan Galewind Moose Sachs. Ethan, the Moose is loose. This card is great.
The Moose is loose. The card is great. I cannot deny these things. Those are both true statements. Why am I the Galewind Moose, though? Because I'm great.
You're great. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
You nailed it.
Wasn't expecting just a clean, positive take on this Sunday morning, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, like, my friend has been as impressive as it looks. Thought it was good, and it has lived up to the hype.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, yes, I'd sort of like conceptually knew all the things. And this is, of course, the 6 mana 6/6 flash, vigilance, trample, one more reach, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Colossal Dreadmaw with flash and reach and vigilance. Cards excellent. Like, I conceptually knew in my head, I was like, this is going to be great. And then, yeah, played out as expected and better.
So how was the early access for you? Did you do any pre-releasing, anything like that?
I did an early access on Wednesday, tried to do some early access on Friday on Magic Online. Unfortunately, I think I missed the one draft pod that fired. I built a sealed pool. That was about it. And then I did a pre-release, sort of like home pre-release with some friends. So did a like round robin with 3 other buddies. So yeah, I got my hand on some sealed, got my hand on some draft. I feel like I've got at least some good information, or some information. We'll see how good it is for this week's episode. How about you?
Yeah, I'm feeling good about where I'm at with the format. I think I have a pretty clear idea of what's good, what the good archetypes are. I did 3 drafts during early access because it was hashtag Bandcamp week. So I taught all day and then stayed up until like 2 in the morning and then went to Bandcamp as a zombie the next day. Just for you folks.
Listeners, for you, I mean, the sacrifices that are made.
For me, too, if we're being honest. I mean, I wanted to play the new set, but I could not stay up any later than 2. My eyes were, anybody who was watching the stream, people were like, why'd you do this? And I was like, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. That's why I jump attack this card.
Yeah.
So did that and then couldn't go to the pre-release because we had a preview performance on Friday night. And Saturday pre-releases at my store just don't really exist. But my brother and I did a home pre-release. I didn't even really know this was a thing. We just went and bought 2 pre-release packs, took them home, actual kitchen table magic, just on my kitchen table, busted open 2 pre-release kits, played the decks, swapped the decks, and then built draft archetypes from the pool, like busted out the Sharpie on basic lands to see up some cards we didn't have. It was like the good old days. It was an absolute blast.
That's really fun. Shout out to you. I love that. Love that as an idea for folks at home, too. I gotta think about that. So wait, what do you mean once you sharpied up some cards for draft archetypes?
Yeah. So after we played the sealed and swapped the sealed decks, we just put like a 12 pack thing together. And then he built like white black vamps from our pool. And I built whatever, green blue frogs. Like we just picked 2 colors and each built a draft archetype, like essentially draft skeletons. But we actually built the deck. And then we were missing some of the red burn spells. Like, we didn't have Take Out the Trash. We didn't have Agate Assault. So we just proxied those up because you're going to have those cards in, in the red archetypes, you know? So the cards that we didn't have that we thought would be draft staples, we proxied up and jammed some draft decks against each other.
Awesome. So you get extra intel. Excited to talk about this. Yeah, so I sort of like jotted down my thoughts in our Google Doc here, and then Ben came through with his, and I think we seem to be, I feel like the Venn diagram's there, and I think we'll have some
us being in line on the format.
We'll have some push and pull in some spots, but you know, we're all just guessing here, like with our early takes, just trying to get ready for week one. Well, next week we'll have some real good intel once we get a week of drafting under our belts. But for now, let's talk about a little housekeeping, then we'll dive into the meat of the episode. First things first is the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show. We have a lot of great perks over at the Patreon page, and really the best perk, I truly believe right now, is the Discord. Access to the Lords of Limited Discord is awesome. It's a great place for 24/7 limited tech support. And new set week is the time to be in it. I say it every time it comes around, but like, we've got this cool feature where like a channel that has recently been talked in has a fire emoji next to it to let you know that like that channel is active. Going to be a lot of active channels in the Bloomborough category starting up on Tuesday when the set drops on both Arena and Magic Online. We have other perks as you move up the reward tier rankings as well, including access to our show notes. I referenced the document already, and access to the episode a day early ad free. So if any or all of that is of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page. And of course, we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we are welcoming Morgan, Seamus, Pavel, Jake, Krista, Bram, Peter, Florence, Quinn, Austin, Dimitri, and Tokyo Muldrifter. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. Those folks are getting in on the new set, and you should be getting in the Discord at new set time as well.
And also want to shout out folks who in our Discord or via Patreon or on Twitter or in the YouTube comments gave us feedback on the little shift we made for the Crash Course last week. Really appreciated that. Ben, I assume you saw it, but a lot of people liked the sleeper common section.
I know what the people want.
I bet you do. And we also got
behind the scenes. Behind the scenes of the podcast, I appreciated Ethan's compliment there because I was like, I kind of want to do this sleeper comment section. He was like, nah, that's dumb. Just put it in your top 10 comments. And I was like, no, I think because it's different, right? Because your top 10 comments, you're trying to pick the 10 best comments. And then like, then we just have like a good list of commons. Plus then sleeper commons is where you're going to put the hot takes.
You get to put your hot takes. I like it. Yeah. And we also got some feedback that people want us to give maybe a little list of some rares. So we might have to think about how to pepper in. I'm very anti-rare in the Crash Course, but we might have a way to chat about some rares in future Crash Courses.
I mean, I don't know that it's crazy, because especially in a set like this, because there's the rares really juice up the archetypes. There's like a gold rare for each of the archetypes that really, again, gives you a clear direction for the archetype. And I just want to compliment you as well. This was the first time I really felt like, yeah, the commons really don't matter that much, do they? Like, I think it's a great shift by you and being forward thinking about how we're going to adapt to play boosters being the new norm. And I do think uncommons matter quite a bit more than commons at this point. So props to you for leading Lords of Limited into the future.
Here we go. Charging the way. All right, let's chat about big picture Bloomborough stuff. The format feels extremely linear to me at the onset, right? Color pairs, and this is not a surprise. Color pairs do specific things, and you want to find your way into whatever the open color pair is for your seat.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. The format feels to me like a core set, but that has a lot of synergy. It's like introduction to synergy. This feels like, you know, we were talking about, is this Core Set Plus or Modern Horizons 3 Lite? And I think it is core set, but way different than any other core set we've had, in that if you hit the synergies for your color pair, your decks can do extremely dumb things, like Modern Horizons 3 power levels of dumb things. But then there's also just core set type games where you can really run out of gas or flood in the format if you don't have engines or your synergies don't set up engines for you. Mm-hmm. It's just a really interesting like depth level. Like right now, to me, when I do the drafts, even this early in the format, it feels pretty clear to me what the picks are, because you get in your lane and you try to build your synergies up. But your decks can still do really powerful things. Like the drafting part seems easier than Modern Horizons 3 to me, like more intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
But the decks can really do some sweet stuff, like way more than you would expect from a core set.
And you're saying synergies, but to me, it just feels like following the directions, painting my numbers a little bit. Like, do you really feel like you're thinking, like, once you're getting into a deck like blue green frogs, that like there's something where you're like, I got this thing to do? I mean, I guess you're trying to think about, you know, things to blink and things that blink, basically, right? Like, each color pair kind of has an A plus B synergy in that way. Like, is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about diving a little deeper?
No, I think it's laid out for you. And I that's where I start to wonder about the staying power of the format a little bit after you're like 50 drafts in or something. I do think it is pretty prescripted what the synergies of your deck are going to be, much more so than Modern Horizons 3. Like, Modern Horizons 3, for whatever it ended up being, had a huge discovery phase the first 2 weeks of the format where you were putting together all kinds of cool stuff. And I think you will experience cool synergies in each archetype, but generally I think each archetype is going to be doing the same thing draft in and draft out. I think paint by synergy, paint by numbers is a great way to describe it, but it's still a really cool work of art if you manage to do the synergy paint by numbers.
Yeah, I do think like when you get to achieve the ceiling of the 10 archetypes, you're gonna have a really good time. Like, I had my best deck on Wednesday in early access was this really good blue green frogs deck. And like, that was really fun to get to just be like, do this thing, flicker this, get two counters here. Like, that was a lot of fun. I had some decks that didn't quite get there in their respective archetypes, and those were less fun because you just do struggle against the better versions of those decks.
I mean, and the format is intuitive in that if you're sitting down to your first drafts, if you start with some good frogs cards, you really should just try to put other frog cards in your deck and you will probably do the thing. I mean, there is more to it than that. Like, there are frogs cards that are better than others and more synergistic than others. But I think if you're blue green, you want to be looking for the frog creature type. If you're red black, you want to be looking for lizards and you want the tricks that care about lizards, you know?
Yeah. Oh man, that card is. Yeah, we'll talk about that a little later.
But I also think along with that, there are a couple of outliers to identify, and I assume there are more than this that I just haven't hit yet, but something like Waterspout Warden doesn't necessarily adhere to that. It's 2 and a blue for a 3/2 frog soldier at common. When it attacks, if another creature entered the battlefield under your control this turn, Waterspout Warden gains flying until end of turn. Presumably that would go in blue-green frogs, and maybe you flicker something to give it flying. I think it's actually its best home is in blue-white.
Right.
Because it's a ground creature that you can then dump all your flying, you know, pulls up the ground creatures and puts counters on them or whatever, and then will still attack as a flyer. Similarly, something like Raccoon Rallyer, this is one in red for the 2/2 Raccoon Bard at common, taps to give something haste until end of turn, activate only as a sorcery. That's better in red-white Valiant than is in red-green, you know, Raccoon Expending. It's still playable in red-green, but its best home is red-white. So it's not 100% creature types go with creature types, and you should be on the lookout for stuff like that, and I'm sure there's more than those too. But generally, you want to be a two-color streamlined color pair, putting all the squirrels and all the foraging in your black-green deck. You know when you discover a new binge-worthy show, or a song that you play on repeat, or a build-around D that's actually good, and you have to share it with your friends so they can experience just how awesome it is?
That's kind of what it's like when you discover that Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. It's such an awesome deal, there's no way you can keep it to yourself.
Friends don't let friends overpay for wireless. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan and switch to Mint Mobile.
$15 a month is less than an attempt at the Arena Open. Less than 3 cold brew coffees. Less than 1 copy of Flage on Magic Online. It's so cheap.
Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/LOL.
That's mintmobile.com/LOL. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/LOL. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigs on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. It felt a lot more, you know, we're talking about comparing it to other sets. Like, is this like a core set or, you know, synergy, whatever. Like, I also felt like vibes of guild sets because of the amount of what I felt were secret gold cards. Like, I definitely had experiences where Black green was the deck I was drafting. There were black and green cards in the pack, but they weren't cards for the black green squirrels forage deck. You know, like there's just a lot of, and so there it doesn't look like it's a gold set, right? A guild set with a bunch of gold commons, but there kind of are. I mean, the cards you just shouted out, like Waterspout Warden isn't exactly a secret blue, white, gold card, right? You can still play it in blue, green frogs. You can play it in theoretically any blue assertive deck because the 3-2, it'll attack as a 3-2 flyer a lot. Same with Raccoon Rallier, right? You can play that in red, black aggro even, right? A 2-mana 2-2 tap to give something haste. That's just like a generally good assertive card. But I definitely found a pinch of like, my deck is trying to do a very specific thing and these commons are ostensibly in this color or color pair and they don't do that thing.
And did you feel like that was a result? Like, do you think somebody was competing for you with black green squirrels or do you think the packs just broke poorly? What was your sense of that?
It's hard to know. I think it might have been, my guess is it was more the former because I definitely was, you know, it's early access. You want to try and be like, okay, I just drafted this deck. I don't want to draft that again, even though maybe that's what's the correct deck for my seat. So I probably was trying to push down some lanes more than I normally would on a you know, any given draft. But I do think that can happen with the way the packs break too.
Well, and I think along with that thought, if you put, I mean, maybe not something like Waterspout Warden, but there's a lot of cards like Moonrise Cleric, let's say as an example, that's the Orzhov common. One Orzhov for a 2-3 flyer. And whenever it attacks, you gain a life.
Mm-hmm.
That's playable in every deck, probably.
Like as long as you're heavy in that, like, you know, if you're white, blue, yeah, 10 white sources. Yeah, you can play it.
Right. But it's only going to be excellent in white, black, and putting cards, much like Modern Horizons 3, putting cards in the wrong home is a significant detriment to not only their power level, but then your deck's power level as an extension. Like you really do want to paint by the numbers, as your example was.
Yeah. Well, and I think as a result, one of the things I'm really interested in this first week, I think this is, and to our listeners as well, like we're not going to be able to outline these cards, but I think this is what you want to be looking for that might help you get a leg up on the folks you're drafting with in this first week is identifying what the flex or glue cards are, because the one, like, getting to start off with cards that are just going to be good in any deck versus trying to shoot the moon a little bit, like starting with a great blue green frog rare or great black red lizard rare, and then just being like, want to do this thing. Sure, you might shoot the moon there, but you also are pretty likely to have to move off of that as well. And I think like identifying cards are like, oh, this is just good. Like the Stoat, the one in a white 2-2 first strike lifelink. Like, sure, that has some gain life on your turn synergy, so might be at its best in black-white, but that's going to be just excellent in any white deck. And those kinds of cards, maybe the ones that are less obviously great as well, I think are worth identifying.
Well, and you had talked about the duos. Mm-hmm. I haven't been that impressed with a lot of the duos. I would say like half of them are pretty good and half of them are largely unplayable or hope to never play.
I think that's a right take. But honestly, the ones that like I was high on already, like Baker's Bane duo, the one in a green.
That two, one is two, excellent.
Like, I didn't realize that was both types when I first read it and like how good that was going to be. Because I was just like, well, that's just a good card intrinsically. I also think the Glide Dive duo is very good. I know I'm higher on this than you, but this is the...
No, I'm coming around. I think that card's good.
It's three black for a 3-3 flyer. When ETBs, you drain two from your opponent, which I just have found very impressive. But I didn't realize. I was like, oh, that's a Rat Lizard. And like, that does just matter enough that it bumps it up. You're right. Like, unfortunately, like white is good, but white's duos are not good. It's got the one mana, 1/1 mouse rabbit. Oh, do you like that one?
No, I don't like that one. That one's terrible. But the 1/2 gain a life is just great.
In black white.
Yeah, it's not really a duo.
It's not really a duo. That's what I mean is like, I think you want to identify the ones that like, oh, those are going to
actually good in two decks.
Are actually good in two decks. Yeah. Well, okay. And by proxy can be good in all four decks because they might have inherent synergies, right? That's why like, The Orzhov card you were talking about, like, yeah, it's probably going to be at its best in black white and maybe not do the thing, but you might actually have like a pocket of the white life gain stuff in your white blue deck, you know, or a pocket of it in your black red deck, you know? And so I think like looking out for that stuff is also important. It's not that it's just going to be, well, then it just does what it does on its own in a non-Orzhov deck. I think it can also do the thing elsewhere.
Right. That's another interesting thing about the format. So, for example, the green decks. If we look at the green color pairs, you have black-green squirrels, blue-green frogs, red-green raccoons, and green-white rabbits.
Rabbits, yeah.
Like, one of the... In all of the archetypes, one of the base colors is much more the dominant color, I think. Like, green is much more predominantly squirrels and frogs.
Yes.
Than it is raccoons and rabbits. And, like, white is much more predominantly...
This is such a good take, Ben. Yeah, this is great. No, that's, like... Well, it's like thinking it goes back to your, this is a real deep cut for the Lords Limited fans out there, but your synergy theory idea. Yeah. And like that, not like all the colors, like you have inherent synergy and then you have like secondary and tertiary synergy. And it's so right that like green does, like my green blue frogs deck had like five blue cards in it, right? It was like green frogs, basically. Like I probably could have done like, other than Pond Prophet being difficult to cast, I could have been green red frogs at that point, you know?
Right. So like during early access, blue has a lot of spells synergies. Like in blue red, blue is the predominant spell synergy color. And I got a lot of the good blue payoffs and I was like, God, red's just not open. So I played blue black spells, which I think that's like going to be an exception rather than the norm. Like I do think blue black wants to be, but I got enough blue black wants to be rats, but I got enough of the blue spells payoffs and enough of the good black instant and sorcery removal that I was able to just kind of substitute black for red because all of my blue spells payoffs were just blue. Like I didn't have any of the blue red gold cards and it was a really cool deck.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. So I bet there's probably stuff like that where you can get deep enough into a color and a color doing that thing and then support it with whatever the secondary color is, whether that's what it's intended pair is in red for your example, or black playing a support role as well.
Right.
I have found that we're back in Outlaws of Thunder Junction territory with not like hit the battlefield 2-for-1 rares, but like, you better answer me or like next turn, this is worse. And the turn after it's worse, like snowball-y rares is what I have felt from the rares that I've seen both on my side and my opponent's side of the battlefield.
I was actually back in Outlaws of Thunder Junction territory. I'm just sick of it. I joined the Arena Direct thing.
Oh my God.
Got myself two boxes of Outlaws of Thunder Junction on the second try. I had an insane pool my first run and went 3-2, just brutal losses. And I was so tilted because my pool was amazing. So I tilt queued a second one and had a much worse pool and just faced minimal competition until the Bonnie Paul bracket at the end of the run, like my last three rounds. And I squeaked through the Bonnie Paul bracket. I went 2-1 versus Bonnie Paul.
Well done. Well done. So now you have two boxes of a great format, Outlaws of Thunder Junction, going to be plopped in your closet.
Absolutely.
You love to see it.
I do agree that the format feels that way. Like it's very rare driven in the sense that like the rares come down and they really juice up a lot of the archetypes. But in that sense, I also think that's nice rather than just being stupid strong everywhere. Like a lot of the really good rares go in exactly one deck. Like Camilla, the Seed Miser or whatever it's called, the black green squirrels rare is only great if you are dedicated black green squirrels. And if you are, it's great. So that's going to be another reward for, we haven't really talked about this or said it like quite so openly, but you need to stay open and you need to find an open archetype in this format. And those rares being that way, make it so that if you do find the open archetype, you can get hugely rewarded with rares too, in addition to just good uncommons for your archetype.
Yeah, totally agree with that. That's been the hard thing is like balancing. I think that's one of the balancing acts of the format is opening a really strong rare, like starting out because there's not a lot of pivot points. So you start out with great blue-green frogs rare, get a good green frog uncommon. If you see the Plume Creed Mentor on pick 4 for blue-white, like, are you specking on that? Are you like, how are you going to read signals? When do you pivot? How deep do you go down building? Like, all right, I have 4 cards for one deck, 4 cards for another deck, figure out in pack 2. It's a hard shift. It's different than OTJ, a lot different in that sense, because the fixing is just not there in this set, in my opinion. Like outside, like colorless fixing is not there. Like green, maybe with Heaped Harvest and the Mana Dork. But outside of green, I don't think you get to be like, oh, I'm just going to take this busted rare and it's going in my deck no matter what. Like, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you aren't generally supposed to be trying to splash.
No.
I think the best decks are going to be two color decks that get
yes.
there.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think we haven't said this yet either, but similar to OTJ, along with rares being good, the premium interaction is very important because so much of the synergy is tied up in creatures that power up the other creatures or that do a thing when more of the creatures enter. Like this rare lizard wants other lizards to enter and then cool things happen, or this squirrel wants other squirrels to come in and forage and then cool things happen. So if you can kill the creatures and break up your opponent's synergy, that's a pretty big boon to you. And you can't go overboard with it because then you're not going to have your own cool stuff going on. But like well-timed premium removal spells go a long, long way in the format.
Yeah, I agree. And like so far, and we'll get to some color rankings and color pair rankings in a second, but I think there's a wide range of successful strategies. Like Naya aggro decks are strong, grindy black green forage or black white life gain decks are strong. It sounds like you had a nice blue black control deck. Like there's a range of stuff you can do in the format. And I don't feel a type of way about like, well, I really want to avoid X going into week one.
I generally agree with that. I think any of the two color pair archetypes that really get there with their synergies and their rares are going to be competitive. I do think there's stuff that is going to come together more often, more consistently, more frequently, and be more consistently good. But I think any of it, at least at the moment, feeling is that you can kind of get there. I'm pretty high on green, as we'll get into.
Yeah. And my current feeling, as I touched on already, is that while some decks are better than others, there's nothing I'm trying to avoid. And so I want to find the open deck. And so that goes back to this idea of like, cards that are flexible or just good on their own are my highest priority. My examples here, I already said Brightblade Stoat and Driftgloom Coyote. That's the 3-white-white 3/4. When it ETBs, you exile a creature an opponent controls until the coyote leaves the battlefield. If the creature had power 2 or less, you put a +1/+1 counter on Driftgloom Coyote. Like those two cards are going to be good in any white deck versus something like Harvest Rite Host, 2-white, 3/3 rabbit citizen. When it or another rabbit you control enters, target creature you control gets +1/+0 until end of turn. Then you draw a card if it's the second time this ability is resolved this turn. I'm not taking this first and being like, let's try and do rabbits. Like I much more would rather like feel the draft out a little bit with cards like the Stoat and Driftgloom Coyote before getting something like Harvest Rite Host. That's my current take on drafting the set.
Yeah, I think that's a great recommendation. I have not, I mean, granted, I've only done 3 drafts during the early access thing. I didn't feel the pinch of, man, I have to hold on to this archetype for dear life, or fingers crossed, I hope this archetype is open. When I looked at the packs, and maybe I just had clean drafts, but I felt like it was easy to identify power level gaps between cards. Like when you were talking about, do you spec on something? Like, is it way more powerful than everything else I've got right now? Yeah, probably. If it's a similar, if I'm squirrels and it's I have an uncommon or two already in squirrels and it's an uncommon for mice, like probably not specking in that sense. You know, I didn't feel the push pull. I don't think quite as much as it sounds like you did.
Yeah, I think I did it. Just something to be aware of that it can happen. Like you just really want to be in tune when you're drafting the set, I think, of like just small tiebreakers of getting deeper into one color versus into a color pair to potentially give you the chance to pivot. And then really knowing when you're like, look, I'm locking in. This is the deck I'm doing. I can't keep waffling, because I do think you can get a little bit of a, oh, and there's this card though. Maybe I have one more pick to bob and weave a little bit.
Right. And I would say it's probably going to be very unlikely that you're like green, black, and then pick 5, you jump ship and go white, red, right? It'll be like you're green and you're feeling out whether you're squirrels or frogs, or you're white and you're feeling out whether you're rabbits or mice. Like whichever the two decks, like your color is heaviest in among the 4 possible, those are going to be the ones where you have the most flexibility to try and pivot, because a lot of the white cards are going to be great, whether you're mice or rabbits, because both of those are at their essence white aggressive decks.
Right. I do think it's easy to also get in a weird spot where you're like, first 4 picks are 4 black green squirrels, and then you see Seedglaive Mentor with nothing else in pack 5. and you're like, okay, I guess I'm speccing on this red white card. And then like pick six, the power level's flat. So like obviously you go back to black green a little bit, but I think you can get in some real trouble here with the gold cards in the set. That's my sort of caution to folks out there.
As in like getting too attached to that Seaglave Mentor you saw fifth and pivoting when you shouldn't, or in what sense?
Yes, in the sense of not pivoting when you shouldn't, because I do think like that's a spot where you do take Seaglave Mentor, but like how much weight are you giving it? Is it 90-10, 80-20? Are you like thinking about, well, this is pick five and then next pack I'm like, well, there's a take out the trash and that's the best card in this pack. And you can get in a spot, I think, where you're building two decks in pack one.
That seems like a not ideal spot to be in. If you can,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm just trying to clarify.
I'm definitely not endorsing this. I'm trying to caution against it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, but there's also going to be times where like that's where pivoting for red white there is right. Like, how do you know? You know, like if you start off with great black, like you don't want to draft black green when it's not open. And so even if your first three or four picks are great in black green and it's not open, like what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess we'll see as we get to do more drafts in the format. We'll have better recommendations to give to our listeners.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. It sometimes feels impossible for me not to compare myself to others, whether it's looking at other content creators, other people at the gym, or my least favorite new addition, comparing myself to other parents.
Yeah, I struggle with this as well. I'm a very competitive person, and I think competitive people tend to naturally try to evaluate how they stack up against other people and whether or not they're going to beat them or whether or not they're winning in XYZ. I catch myself doing this in the content creation game, as well as, you know, other teachers, other people's bands. Like, do I have as good of players as them? Do I have more kids in Allstate band than they do? And it's just a rough road to go down.
Comparison is the thief of joy, and it's easy to envy other people's lives or accomplishments. It might look like they have it all, but in reality, they probably don't.
Therapy can help you focus on what you want instead of what others have, so you can start living your best life.
And therapy doesn't only have to be for the biggest moments in your life. It can be extremely helpful for the things that come up for us each and every day.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Stop comparing and start focusing with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/lords today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show. All right, let's get into some rankings here of colors, archetypes, and a revisit to our top 10 commons.
Yeah, so if I ranked the colors right now, I think initially last week would have had white in first place. I think after playing with the cards, green has surpassed white for me. I think I would go green 1, white 2, and then red and black in pretty close order after white, and then blue bringing up the rear.
Green, the Watsy's just really trying to make up for years of green being terrible and limited. Like 2024 has been good to green in the play booster era. Yeah, this all checks out to me. Like the thing I feel strongly about is that blue is the worst color. I would have had not like the Naya colors up front and black in fourth, and not feeling really strongly about which of the Naya colors is in first. I played a lot more with white this week than I did with the other color pair or other colors. And so I liked, you know, I like white, black, white, red, white, green. Didn't get to play much blue, but yeah, this checks out to me. Green has been really impressive. I mean, it's got some banger, like strong commons, and its uncommons are really good.
Well, that's the thing. Like it's really deep at both common and uncommon, and it's got a lot of the best uncommons in the format. And then if we go back to kind of the look we took at Modern Horizon 3, where you look at which are the best multicolor uncommons and the best multicolor commons, and I think green hits the bill there. You know, we talked about how awesome we thought red white was, but we were like, we don't really like the red white uncommon or the red white common. Mm-hmm. Like green just doesn't miss there. Like the green black uncommon's amazing, the green blue uncommon's amazing, the green white uncommon is amazing, even the green red common does exactly what green red wants to do. And then also in the common department, those multicolored commons for green are great. And the thing that green is really good at is, yeah, the format's a synergy format, but also like stats matter. Like it's green's kind of got the OTJ thing going on again, where like its cards are just a really good rate for what you're getting.
So I really liked green. And then I think if we dip into archetype power rankings, like if we have three tiers, I would put three of the green color pairs in tier one, green, black, blue, green, white, green, and maybe red, green will be there too. I played against some great red, green decks in the early access. I think it maybe lacks a bit of staying power or just figuring out how to get that piece. Like I think it can be vulnerable to flood.
Yeah.
So figuring out how to mitigate that for red, green might be a key to bumping it up into tier one. Mm-hmm. And then the other archetype that I'd put in tier one is black, white. I don't have much experience playing with it yet, but it was impressive playing against it. And again, hits the bill of like all those uncommons are just like really good.
Yep. Yeah. Black, white was very impressive.
And then tier two, I'd put blue, black, red, white, red, green, red, black. And again, was very impressed with red, black lizards when it came together. Was very impressed with blue, black rats. And blue, black rats is truly aggro. Like it's weird. I wouldn't have thought that, but it really is blue, black aggro threshold rats. And you're trying to like hit threshold in a hurry.
Interesting. Yeah, I did not play with or against blue, black rats. So I'm excited to see what that's like this week. And I think worth noting that red, white is not tier one for us going into week one.
I don't think so. The cards are so small. Like that's where like white got knocked out for me. Cause I thought red white was gonna be a house, but like your opponent like offsprings their Flowerfoot Swordmaster on turn three, and they have like a 1/2 and a 1/1 that then they're trying to like trigger Valiant to make their creatures just as large as the green cards are.
Right. Well, like, and there's just not a lot. There's way more ways to trigger Valiant than there are Valiant cards. That was the thing I found is like the one or two times I drafted red white, I was like, cool, I have like two cards that say Valiant on them. Cause some of them aren't even that good. Like there's like the one in a red 2-drop that has Valiant, you rummage, right? Discard a card, draw a card. Like that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to boost my stats or have like a mousetrap or whatever, you know? And like I just felt like I got tons of ways to target my creatures. I don't have a ton of creatures that care about being targeted.
Yeah, that's fair. And then tier three, blue red and blue white bringing up the rear. As much as it pains me for blue red, I just think that deck's really finicky.
I agree with that. I haven't seen blue white at all yet either, so I don't know. Can't speak to it. I still really like Plume Creed Mentor.
But there's something to be said there too, right? That a bunch of good drafters are drafting early access and you're not seeing blue white. Like you saw a lot of Sultai, you saw a lot of green blue, you saw a lot of green black.
That's
like,
true.
That's yeah. There's something to be said there. I mean, well,
this again, why like blue is just so, as we'll get to when we get check out what kinds of cards we want to be, what kinds of commons we'd be happy first picking. I don't have any blue cards there because I think blue's commons are not good.
Like blue's commons are atrocious. It has some good uncommons, but the commons are bad.
But even its good uncommons are narrow. Like it doesn't get the Stoat in white or the Coyote in white, right? It doesn't get these sort of just like intrinsically strong, like the bird, my hexproof bird, the Flash 2/1 flyer. Like that's kind of what it gets in terms of this is an uncommon I'd be happy playing in every blue deck.
But right, like, when green gets Hunter's Talent, which is just absolutely absurd.
And the moose, and like even something like the card I was really high on, the squirrel that has offspring and forage to put 2+ +1 counters on it. Like that's obviously best in squirrels, but like you can't, like you can forage in other green decks as well, you know?
Yes, right. Yeah.
So it looks like we had I put together a rudimentary list and honestly was struggling to get to 10 cards.
10 commons you'd be happy first picking.
Yeah, because I didn't want to put any blue cards on this list. I took Dire Downdraft off. And so we're struggling a little bit. But we have 5 cards that we both really, really like. I think those are definitely worth shouting out here. First is Intrepid Rabbit. That's the 2-white 3/2 with offspring 1. And when it enters the battlefield, you give a creature ++1 until end of turn. Card is as expected.
We got Nocturnal Hunger next. This is 2 black for an instant at common. This destroys target creature at instant speed, and then you either have to gift your opponent a food or lose 2 life.
We got another removal spell here and take out the trash. 1 red, deal 3 damage to a creature. If you control a raccoon, you get to bottom a card from your hand and draw a card.
Next, we've got Baker's Bane Duel. It's 1 green for the 2/2 squirrel raccoon. It ETBs to give you a food token, and if you expend 4, it gets +1/+1. That card has been very, very, very impressive.
Agreed. And then also Head of the Homestead, the 3 Selesnya 3/2, enters the battlefield, and you make 2 1/1 rabbit creature tokens. those five commons are great.
Yeah, and I think green white is going to be the deck to beat going into the format. I think that's going to be the thing that 17 lands says is the best, because all the cards are so straightforward and powerful. Great rates, great stats. I think if I were trying to like get into something, I'd be trying to get into green, specifically green white, headed into first drafts of the format.
My friend, when I did my sealed pre-release, I found sealed like tough because, again, there's not a ton of fixing. And so, and you really have this like tension of perhaps like what's like, I have a deep roster of literal cards in versus wanting to play your most powerful cards, etc. And my buddy Todd was just like, oh, my deck's kind of building itself. And he just had a nutso green white deck. And he was like, I was like, dude, this deck is great. And he was like, yeah, I mean, you know, it's got like a few cards of like, if it was a, it's like a good draft deck, but it has a few cards that like I wish, you know, were other cards. I was like, yeah, but you're playing like five of your rares. Like, you're not going to get to do that in draft. So this is still better than a draft deck. But I agree with you that green white seems like it's likely the deck to beat going into week one.
So we're going to get into these other commons.
Up to you. What do you want to talk about?
I'm going to shout out my other five because I'm a greedy
all
boy.
All five? Like, you can't, you're not first picking Pond Prophet or Corpseberry Cultivator, are you?
Pond Prophet, maybe, but I'm hoping to not first pick Corpseberry Cultivator. But so Cash Grab is excellent in green black. I think it is mostly a green black only card, but it is the card that makes that deck tick. That's the one in a green.
It's got inherent synergies. That's the thing that makes it good, right? Is that like, not only is it at its best in black green, but you can just have some squirrel stuff in your green red deck, you know?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. And so that's the look at the top four, put a permanent card from among them into your hand, the rest into your graveyard. It also fuels graveyard stuff super well for, you know, you don't necessarily have to be green black squirrels. Some of the black cards care about graveyard things and thresholds. There's some overlap there. Cash Grab's just a really good card. I like it more than I like stupid whatever from Modern Horizons 3, Malevolent Rumble. Yeah. Cash Grab's where it's at. Malevolent Rumble, move over. Heaped Harvest has also been amazing. This is two and a green for the artifact food. And whenever it enters and whenever you sacrifice it, you get to search up a basic land. Card's awesome in squirrels because it gives you a forage trigger. It just helps you hit your land drops. That deck has access to a lot of cards if you pop off, so you really want mana to spend the stuff on. So I think it's just great in green black, plus also enables splashing and cool stuff for other just base green decks that are pretty spicy.
That's the thing about, like, you know, I was comparing this to Gift of Paradise, which is a two and a green enchantment, enchants a land. When it enters, you gain three life, and the land taps for two mana of any color. And there were, you know, formats a while ago, right, where you could just like grab three Gift of Paradise and then take whatever bombs you saw. And I do think that you can get past powerful cards in the set. But as we said, a lot of the rares, you're not like just drafting a bunch of A's in any deck. They're like A's in a frog's deck. It's an A in a rabbit deck. And you're not likely to be wanting to put a bunch of those in the same deck.
Yes, correct. Yeah. The last card I'll shout out of mine is Polywallop. That's the frog removal spell, three and a green. As long as this card is going late, frogs is going to be very difficult to deal with, because Polywallop, and this is the kind of thing that like green has tons of that blue doesn't have any of, which is like cards that really matter for an archetype at common. Like blue has none of those. And like Polywallop is a B plus. In a frog's deck, and playable in other decks that just might have a random frog. Like, if you can get this down to three mana, it's a playable removal spell. Like, all you need is one frog for it to be playable. And if you get the full Monty, it is nuts.
I agree with that. I do want to shout out Glide Dive Duo again, the five mana black flyer that drains two. I think I'd be happy first picking that. And I'm still a huge carrot cake stan at this point. I don't know if I'm happy first.
I'm not a carrot cake. Dan.
I don't want to first pick it, but you don't think it's a good card?
I don't think it's a good card. I think it's too small ball for the format.
Too small ball.
Could be. Like, if it were a green card, yes, sign me up.
I'm not into it. Yeah, because of forage. That makes sense. All right.
I do think Banishing Light is probably a card that should be on both of our lists as well. I probably should.
It
was on your list. I know. Yes, sorry. I'm not meaning to lump you in with my bad card evaluations. Was on your list. It should be on my list as well.
Yeah.
I think that is probably just a good enough removal spell that you're happy playing that in white decks.
Yeah.
And that's a card fair. That's similar to what you were talking about. That's a card you can take early and feel good about.
It's just putting go in any white any, deck. Exactly. Whereas, like, I also really like Sonar Strike, the one in a white deal four to a attacking, blocking, or tapped creature. If you have a bat, you gain three. But it's like, am I really first picking that? Is that
that's
really
only black white, right? It's you're only right, putting that in a black white deck
because you're not happy with that kind of a removal spell in red white or green white,
right? Could you play it in those decks? Yes, but that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Where like, not only it is a worse card itself, but it also then is bringing down your deck because it's not in the right home, and then you've got like homeless pieces in your deck.
That's a real like clear like Sonar Strike is at its best in black white. Secondarily, like probably still good enough in blue white because you're beating down in the air and then killing something on the crackback. And then you just like don't want to put that in red, white, and green, white. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think, you know, and again, we keep referencing like two of the color pairs. Like thinking about that stuff and having categorizations of that in your head going into the draft of like Sonar Strike for white, blue, and white, black. And maybe those two are going to want similar white cards compared to white, red, and white, green. Like I do think the format is divided up like that. Where each, like, if you take a color, let's say red, and you slice it into red, white, red, green, and then red, black, red, blue, but that's not quite right for red. That's another reason. Red's a little disparate in what each of its archetypes want to do. I think that is a bit of a knock against red.
Is it? I just think, like, if you remove blue, red from the equation,
it just wants to beat down.
It just wants to beat down.
That's fair, yeah.
Yeah. Let's chat about some individual cards that maybe aren't making this list, cards that we had impressions of going for the crash course that we want to reevaluate. I definitely do. First up, Sinister Monolith. Had a chance to play with this in my first draft. This is 3 and a black artifact. At the beginning of combat on your turn, each opponent loses a life and you gain a life, and you can pay 2, tap, sack it to draw 2 cards as a sorcery. 2 slow in black white. Just basically every card I feel like I was higher than you on last week, I was wrong about. Like, I was just like, that's not getting there. That didn't get there. So not a huge fan of the monolith.
Some of those build around D's, though. Songs are going up.
Still
up,
build
up,
around D's. But I'll say, I will shout out another card I was really impressed with. Scales of Shale. 2 in a black instant. Costs 1 less to cast for each lizard you control. Target creature gets +2/+0 and gains lifelink and indestructible until end of turn. This card is a beating. I had 4 of them in a red-black deck during early access, and they were just incredible. And like, one of the cool things was, as I was identifying it, I never had to take it early. Like,
right.
No other deck wants it. It's like an A in your deck, and no other deck wants it. That's such a sick spot to be in. Like, it's as good in red-black lizards as, like, you're talking about Poliwollop in blue-green frogs. It's just like, it does the same thing, just like crazy cheap, impossible to really like interact profitably with.
Right. You can't play around it because it's so cheap.
And one of the cool things it does is it makes racing impossible. And so you get to do stuff where like it looks like you have no idea how to do math because you're like, I'll trade 2 damage for your 3 damage to me and 2 damage for 4 damage. And then you're like, gain 7. And you just completely swing the game back in your favor.
Yeah. Next up is Starscape Cleric. This is 1 in a black for a 2/1 uncommon with offspring 2 in a black. It's got flying and can't block. And whenever you gain life, each opponent loses 1 life. Talk to me about this card. I haven't seen it yet. I was not super high on this card.
This card, I mean, it's only in black white in my mind. I mean, maybe in like the most hyper aggressive black red decks. But it plays out like Blood Artist in a sacrifice deck in the life gain deck. It's just like, get this, like, ping, drain, like you know, attacking with your 2/3 flyer that gains you 1. Like every instance of life gain, and especially if you offspring this, it just ends the game really quickly.
Because then you're hitting for like 5 a turn the first time you gain life or something. Yeah.
It's so much. Like, yeah, and the fact that it's evasive. But so just like the fact that it can't block, I was just like, well, so just think about like, well, Blood Artist can't block. And so it's just sitting there doing the thing.
Right. That makes sense to me. So you think the can't block is not much of a knock against the card because you're not interested in blocking with it anyway.
You're right. You don't want to engage this in combat unless it can hit, you know?
So how important is this to black white? Like if you put this against some of the other black white uncommon payoffs, like where is it in the payoff power rankings? Is this one of the more important cards for the deck, you think? One of the, well, you're in the deck, so you're going to take it anyway.
I think it might also depend on how aggressive, because I do feel like some of what black white can do is I mean, black white grinds quite a bit. It reminded me a lot of the black white life gain deck in Crimson Vow, right? Where you just like those mirrors were kind of relentless. And that's what this sort of felt is like you get chip damage, gain and drain, that sort of stuff. And just cleric slots in nicely. I don't have like a running list in my head of like all of the payoffs. Like Star Charter is probably better still, the 3 and a white 3/1 flyer in your end step. If you gained life that turn, you get to look at the top four, reveal a creature with power 3 or less from among them, put it into your hand. Like that's probably better, right? But like I think Starscape Cleric is good.
Well, yeah. So here's why I'm asking. For example, like you said, you hadn't played with blue black. I'm going to jump down to one of my cards, Persistent Marsh Stalker. This is the one in black, 3/1 at uncommon, gets +1/+0 for each other rat you control. And then it's got threshold. Whenever you attack with one or more rats, you can pay 2 and a black. If you do, return it from your graveyard to the battlefield, tapped and attacking. Like that is, I think, the best blue black uncommon rats payoff to me. Like that's the reason to get into blue black. Is it that, like that's what I'm trying to dial in on? Is it that?
I'm trying
is
to. Yeah,
that so, much of a reason?
No, I don't think it's a reason to draft the deck. That like I'm not taking that and going, ooh, let me try and get in black white. It especially because in my mind, I don't think any other deck really wants it. Like maybe black red aggro wants it, but that's about it. And so I feel like it's a card you can get late, and then you go, ooh, cool. I can do the thing, or like I've already
C plus type card right. in the draft, but might perform way better than that. In your deck.
Yeah, for sure. But if Marsh Stalker is like a reason, I don't think that's true for the Starscape Cleric.
All right, talk to me about Blacksmith Talent. I listened to the LR set review, and LSV was also singing this card's praises.
Oh, okay, yeah. So this is a single red class enchantment. When it ETBs, you create a colorless equipment artifact token named Sword with equipped creature gets +1/+1 and equip for 2. And then level up 2 and a red at the beginning of combat on your turn, attach target equipment you control to up to 1 target creature you control. And then 3 and a red, level 3, during your turn, equipped creatures you control have double strike and haste. So basically, if you think about the difference between equip two is a lot, right, for a short sword.
Yeah.
But for 1 more mana, you never, once you level this up to level 2, you never have to pay that equip cost because you're just auto equipping at the beginning of combat on your turn. And then level, and so that is giving you a free Valiant trigger if you have any of that stuff. You're getting a boost to your creature, etc. And then level 3, double strike and haste for free. Like basically, it says every creature you cast has double strike and haste. I mean, this card just like really performed well, and it's like very hard to deal with. Turns every, it makes like everything in your deck that has keyword bad be very good. I was just very impressed by this card.
Well, one of the other things he was talking about was that it curves so nicely with itself. Like you play it on 1, you play your 2-drop,
yep.
You suit up your 2-drop on 3, and then you level it up on turn 4, and your opponent's facing a 3-3 double strike.
Mm-hmm.
Like that it is just a really smooth thing.
So, yeah.
Cool. That card would not have been on my radar
no.
at all.
I definitely did not think that card was good, and then just saw it on the other side of the battlefield. It's one of those things where like it instantly happened. I was like, oh, this is a huge problem.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. Next up is Steam Path Charger. This is 1 in red for a 2/1 at common with Offspring 2. And whenever the creature dies, it deals 1 damage to target player.
Yeah, this card impressed me. The fact that it can trigger your damage matters stuff in Lizards while still trading, right? So trades with their 2-drop, you still get a damage and then get to play whatever.
Your 3-drop with the loss of life. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. pretty big.
And one of the things that's great for, and so I feel like obviously this is at its best in red black, and then secondarily pretty darn good in red green because your 2-drop has the option to trigger expend 4. And like that's huge because you can't load up your deck with 4 drops and 5 drops to trigger expend 4. But having the optionality of, oh, sure, I can play this on turn 2, but I also have a way to like sequence my stuff where that my 2-drop will on its own get my expend 4 bonuses as well.
Next up is Clifftop Lookout. This is 2 and a green for a 1/2 uncommon with reach. Whenever it enters, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a land card. Put that card on the battlefield tapped. Rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. You say you think this card might be bad. I do agree it's a very small body. It's hard to say it's bad. Probably just less good than we thought it was. I mean, it's not a pull into green, I don't think.
It's not a pull into green, and like I don't think you're playing this in a non-frog deck. And I don't even think it's that good in frogs. Like, I think this card might just be, I hate to use it, but I think this might be bad.
It's impossible for it to be bad. It's a, at worst a C that is playable in every green deck. A three drop that hits you a land. Together, you cannot say this card. No, I refuse. I'm not having, I won't hear it.
Okay. Yeah, have you played with this card?
I have played with this card, and I agree it's very small. That is, I will give you, it's a very small body. I will give you points there, but the hitting a land drop, there's so many green decks that are so mana hungry. Worse than Heaped Harvest, I think, which would not have been apparent to me initially. Like, much worse than Heaped Harvest.
Yes. I don't know, man. We're going to have to revisit this in a week. I feel like I'm going to get to wear you down until you're going to say, yeah, this card's bad.
Just say it's bad?
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever. Sure. I'll come on now. It's bad. Don't play frogs, go.
All right, build around D, reevaluation, possibly. Stocking the pantry, single green enchantment. Whenever you put one or more +1/+1 counters on a creature you control, put a supply counter on stocking the pantry. Pay two, remove a supply counter, draw a card. I played this in my frogs deck. Now, it was also off the back of, I had that, there's a green one drop rare that whenever you have a creature of the like greens four creature types enter, you get a counter on it. So it was just like this free engine. I ended up with like 12 counters on my stock in the pantry. I didn't have any mana to be able to actually draw the cards off of it. But it did the thing a little bit. And I know I heard Sam Black was cooking with this during early access on Wednesday.
I watched LSV pop off with it in one of his draft videos with a black green squirrels deck. I think this card is real. And other things that are worth noting with squirrels and just drawing cards, you can accidentally deck yourself with cash grabs in squirrels. Like, get to the point where you can't play cash grabs and you can't play whatever it is, Wix Patrol or whatever that mills three and then kills something. And I think actually that 2/3 changeling that can put a card on the bottom of your library, I think that's a nice one of in those types of decks, just so you don't get to the accidental decking point. And then when you do churn through, if you do accidentally go that hard, then being able to stack your deck is pretty cool. And there's also a lot of rebuy tools to where, like, if you mill that, you'll be able to pick it up out of the graveyard to not deck yourself. But I do think stocking the pantry is real. I don't think it's great.
It's not
a high
build
pick,
around,
because
right?
Nobody else is going to want it. Right. Yeah. Yes. Either your deck does the thing and you will play a stocking the pantry, but you're not like taking stocking the pantry and are like, yes, we're doing it.
I think that might be worth, rather than maybe going away from diminishing returns, like giving the card like a niche grade or something, like a way to phrase that. Cause like, I agree. Stocking the pantry is such a unique card where it's like, you're going to know, or I theoretically, hopefully you will know, when your deck wants it, but you're never taking it highly. Have you played with this little guy, 3/3 mascot, 2-mana 2/1 shapeshifter changeling, and you can filter a mana once a turn?
I have not. I think that card's really bad.
This card's bad. And I think on a broader scale, like, I think 2/1 for 2 mana is a tough stat line to get behind in the format, because there's a lot of 1/3s and there's 1/1 tokens running around. Like think about the blue common, the 1 and a blue 2/1 frog that loots when it comes into play.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to like that card. I think 2/1 is such a bad body for that card.
It's just pretty small. Yeah.
It's really small. So I'm 2/1s are on notice for me a little bit right now. 2/1s for two are on notice for me.
All right. We got Agate Blade Assassin next. This is 1 or black for the 1/3. Whenever it attacks, defending player loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. You don't like this card.
I did not. This basically doesn't have attacks after like turn 2 or 3. And
Scales
like
of Shale, baby.
That's so mopey. Like, you don't want to be doing that. Like, yeah, I think it's, I just feel like it's bad, especially because, yeah, Scales of Shale, you are playing in Lizards. But other than that, like, I guess maybe if you have some equipment, like some ways to like suit this up. I don't know. This is like, I think this is just replacement level. Like this, I think we had this on our sleeper commons list.
Yeah.
Like so far down for me.
So can you talk to me? Can you reconcile not liking 2/1s? And then it sounds like you like Steam Path Charger for the Lizards deck more than Agate Blade Assassin. And that would not have been intuitive to me. I haven't cast either card yet.
Just because it, like, I feel like it trades a lot. But like 2/1 trading for a 2/2 or a 3/2 is a lot easier to get behind. Slap. Whereas like this, I feel like it bounces off the 2-2, and then once they have two 2-2s, you just can't attack with this.
Yeah. Okay, that checks out with me.
So I was just not a fan of that card. And like, I know I'm talking about how I like don't like 2-1s because of 1-3s, and this is a 1-3, but 1-3s on defense are better than on offense.
Right. That's what I was asking you to reconcile. And you did articulate that. I appreciate it.
Got there.
You passed the test.
Yeah.
Tree Guard Duo is up next. It's 3 and a green for 3/4 Frog Rabbit. When it enters, until end of turn, target creature you control gets vigilance and gets +X/+X, where X is the number of creatures you control. I also like this card.
This might belong in our top 10, honestly. Like, just because of you're just happy with this.
Happy? I mean, it was a problem. Maybe I played against it several times, and it's like, well, do you want to take 7 or do you want to chump?
Like, basically outside of, like, I think green-black is probably the deck where you don't want to play this. But I think in the other three, I think in green-blue, green-red, and green-white, I think you're happy with this.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I like the card. It has moved up for me. It is one of the duos I do not mind. We got Fire Glass Mentor next. I think we're going to disagree here. This is black red for an uncommon 2/1. At the beginning of your second main phase, if an opponent lost life this turn, exile the top 2 cards of your library. Choose one of them. Until end of turn, you may play that card.
Yeah, I really like red black. Right? I've come up on it a lot. I was saying last week that I didn't really think it was that good of a deck. I think it's great off of the back of Scales of Shale. I don't like this card that much. I'm pretty down on 2 mana 2/1s.
I haven't cast it, but it's been very impressive from opponents. Much like you were talking about Starscape Cleric, like just never wanting to block or attack. Like, this is essentially just kind of a fragile enchantment for your deck. Like, yeah, it's a bad stat line, but if you think about it as just a card advantage engine, it was very oppressive against me from several opponents. Especially, I mean, this is like a bit of Magical Christmas Land, but if you combo it with Gev Scaled Scorch, which is the black red rare, it's a 3/2 lizard that
cards
other lizards amazing. Get bigger when they come in, and whenever you cast a lizard, Gev deals the damage to the opponent. And I think that is the key to lizards, is being able to damage your opponent outside of combat is pretty important for lizards. And if you can do that reliably, Fireglass Mentor is really strong.
Here's the issue I had with Mentor, is that I wanted to spend my mana pre-combat. Like, in order to trigger this, and even with the example you're giving of Gev, like, triggering outside of combat, that means you're casting something in your first main phase. And so then you're not really, like, maybe, yeah, you can hit a land off the Mentor post-combat, but I felt like either you're trying to trigger stuff like that and you're having to invest mana, or you're triggering it through combat. But even through combat, like, you need, as even as turn 4 or 5 or whatever, like, you need ways to push damage. So whether that's spending the mana pre-combat to get some expend triggers happening to bump up stuff to push damage, or being able to cast a trick or removal in combat, like, I just felt like triggering this wasn't hard. Triggering this plus with having mana, the mana to cast the stuff was hard.
I've seen it also with the red duo, the one that pings, the 1/3, the 2 and a red 1/3 that pings. Like, okay. It was very good with that. So I do think making sure because I agree, I've also seen it like pop off and people not have the mana to spend on it. But I think that is the trick for the card. If you can figure out how to enable it and have mana open, it does really give you a lot of card selection.
Okay. All right. I'll keep my eye on it. And maybe there's a little bit, you know, I haven't seen the 1/3 lizard otter yet. That's the one that taps to deal a damage. And then whenever you cast, what is it? Instant or sorcery, you get to untap it.
Mm-hmm.
But there might be a red black deck that's more interested in dealing doing the damage outside of combat stuff. So maybe less of a Scales of Shale attacking deck and more of a, like, I don't know, maybe blue red spells is secretly a red black spells deck. Anyway, speaking of blue-red spells, not a huge fan of Otterball Antics. 1 and a blue, sorcery. Make a 1/1 blue and red otter creature token with prowess and has flashback 3 and a blue, and when you cast it from anywhere other than your hand, you put a ++1 counter on that creature. I'm just pretty underwhelmed by this. It just feels real small to spend 2 mana for a 1/1. Like, if you're really hoping, sort of like that discard spell with flashback that we argued about last week, like, this feels like a card that you're really hoping to just, like, mill or loot away. And then it's like quote unquote free. And so
that's
it's fine.
Bad, right? Like, that's this card's bad. Yeah, that's, I agree. It's really small ball. And that's where, like, the core set green thing, like, comes back into play. Like, some of the other colors are like trying to do stuff to like get their stuff to just a normal size for the format. And that is not where you want to be.
Yeah.
Dire Downdraft is next. This is two and a, or no, it should be two and a blue most of the time. Three and a blue for an instant costs one less to cast if it targets an attacking or tapped creature. Target creature's owner puts it on the top or the bottom of their library. This is fine, but it's not premium. Like, there's enough stuff running around that has ETBs and cares about ETBs. This card gets awkward really quickly.
Well, and it's so expensive when you're trying to clear stuff out of the way.
Yes.
Like, four mana to interact when you're like trying to be the beatdown is a big ask.
Which you never are going to be as a blue deck because blue's horrible.
Right.
But boom, got him. No, it's not that bad. You should still
draft. It's pretty bad.
Flowerfoot Swordmaster is next. This is white for a 1/2 with Offspring 2. As Valiant, whenever this creature becomes the target of a spell or ability you control for the first time each turn, mice you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. Again, this is like really understated compared to most things in the format. And then you're, so it's three mana for a 1/2 and a 1/1, and you're trying to pay, like, get two Valiant triggers to then make them into a 3/2 and a 3/1 plus some other mice. Like, it's just so much has to go.
How much work are you doing? Where other decks just don't have to do that work.
Don't have to do the work. Yeah. I think I'm pretty down on Flowerfoot Swordmaster from where I was.
Also down on this next one. Interesting. Not a B, Ben. Not a B.
Not a B. This is Daring Wave Rider. 4 blue-blue for a 4/4. When it enters, you can cast target instant or sorcery with mana value 4 or less from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. That spell will be put into your graveyard. Exile it instead. This is a little on the expensive side for it to really pull you into blue-red. And like, that's a deck I don't really want to be pulled into. Like, you're just behind so often as that deck, and this isn't quite good enough to catch you up was what I found.
Can you play this in blue black?
Like, yeah,
right? Like, this, I mean, it's kind of doing a, like, if you have a removal spell, it's kind of doing like a Wix Patrol impression in blue black.
Right. It's a weird, that was what my blue black deck was. It was Daring Wave Riders and the crabs in, you know, a spell shell. Speaking of the crab, Eddie Merck Crab is next. 5 blue-blue for a 5/5 with flash at uncommon. Costs one less to cast for each instant sorcery card in your graveyard. Enters tapped if it's not your turn. And when it enters, tap up to 2 target creatures. This is the real deal as far as spells payoffs go. Like, this is, if you're going to draft blue-red, should be for Eddie Merck Crab. And also the fact that this is just blue is cool. Like, I think it's going to give you outs to do blue-black spells, that kind of thing.
But like, so you don't want to first pick this, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, I would. I mean, but I think it would be a less than desirable first pick. Like, I mean, if you got a choice in the moose versus this or something, you're taking the moose 10 out of 10 times because it's just single colored and asks nothing of you.
Correct. And so, like, it's, I just feel like over the years, we would have called this a build around card, but you're not building around. I mean, you are in the sense of it goes in a specific deck, but you're not. My connotations for cards that are like build arounds is like you're taking it and trying to like, it's a reason to do the thing. This is a reward, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like a B minus. This does get me to start one of drafting blue.
Okay.
But I think it's just, if you're building a blue deck, but I guess it doesn't go in frogs. It's probably a blue red or a blue black gold card.
Mm-hmm.
But it is powerful. Like, it coming, like, even if you're spending 5 mana for it, if you've got any other board presence, it shuts down your opponent's attacks and then gives you clear attacks with almost all or most of your team. It's just very swingy on the board state.
Yeah. No, I buy it. It's a really powerful card. I'm just trying to figure out, okay, even if I'm thinking about it as blue-red, blue-black hybrid, then where am I taking it? Like, am I, you know, do I start off? Because I could see, like, starting off with red removal spell, or black removal spell, and then seeing Eddie Merck Crab third and going, okay.
Yeah, I think the difference between what you're trying to get at, which is this is more of a reward than a reason, is I think this is just an intrinsically very powerful card. So like in that sense, I think it's kind of a reason.
An intrinsically powerful card that has black or red in its mana cost.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
But then it is like, I am happy to spend 3 blue-blue for a 5/5 that does what this card does. And that doesn't take that much building around. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think you have to do that much work for this to be a very good card.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Shoreline Looter is up next. This is 1 and a blue for a 1/1. Can't be blocked. And whenever it deals combat damage to a player, draw a card, then discard a card unless 7 or more cards are in your graveyard. This is a very good threat. Very good card selection. This is best in blue-black, but I think you can play it in most blue decks. because it helps you get to threshold, and then all like over the course of three or four turns, you know, you're dumping a card every turn, and then, you know, you cast some spells or whatever, trade some things off. Once this is turned on, it must be killed, and it being unblockable is just randomly really great.
Okay, yeah, I haven't played with this yet, so I'm on the lookout. I'm still very skeptical of 2-mana 1-1, but again, I think it's in the category of a few of the cards we've talked about where you're like, it's just not a crit, like, it's an enchant, it's a fragile enchantment, right? But, like, this has the benefit of, well, if you are actually in any way aggressive, it's also progressing that game plan as well.
Yes. Next up is Bone Cash Overseer. Black for a 1-1 Squirrel Warlock at uncommon. Tap, pay, life, draw a card. Activate only if three more cards left your graveyard this turn, or if you've sacrificed a food this turn. This card is incredible.
I saw it in a black-green deck that Florida Mun was piloting in early access, and it was really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's black-green only, but it is, again, excellent in black-green. Like, it being a one-drop that lets you curve into cash grab being turned on, like with a squirrel already in play, is amazing. The other thing that's really cool, it wasn't immediately apparent, is you don't actually have to forage.
Right.
To you be able to, stack a food. To tap it. Like, you can just sack a food that's laying around, or you can sacrifice your Heaped Harvest to itself to go get a land and then draw a card. This card was...
You turned your food into gain two clues.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very, very strong.
Yeah. I buy it. I'm convinced.
Next up is Stargaze. This is black for X, black and X for an uncommon sorcery. Look at twice X cards from the top of your library, put X cards from among them into your hand, and the rest into your graveyard. You lose X life. I think this might actually be a card. Like, not a very high pick, but I think you can run out of gas or flood in the format. Like, the format feels core set-esque in that way. And I think you have time to, assuming you affect the board, then play a Stargaze late, much like Bath Song or whatever. I think this casting this for five lets you see six cards and take three of them. I mean, losing three is not ideal in that scenario, but assuming you can afford to tank that, like, you're probably having some amazing turns the turn after you cast Stargaze.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like, you're only a specific kind of deck wants this, right? A black control deck, and that's probably...
But yeah, black green and black blue probably are the only ones. Or maybe black
there
white
might be
also, because you can afford the life hit in black white.
Right, yeah.
But both black green and black blue also really benefit from the cards you don't use going into your graveyard. Like, being able to turbo on threshold is really strong.
I think this is just good. You're convincing me. Like, the fact that it goes in three of the four decks, and if there's a flavor of black red that is more like blue red in disguise, right? It's a black red spells deck. More than a black red beatdown deck, like, this could have, like, a lot of different homes.
Yes, but I think you have to do some deck building and some work around it. It's just not like you can't just first pick it and be like, great, I have a great card in Stargaze. Like, it's nowhere near as good as Persistent Marsh Stalker in that sense. But assuming you understand control deck building and drafting, Stargaze could be an important piece of those types of decks.
All right, I like it. Good shout.
Wix Patrol. Just want to go back to some of the cards we disagreed on for black for a 5/3 ETBs mill 3. And then when you do target creature and opponent controls gets -X until end of turn, where X is the greatest mana value among cards in your graveyard. This one is amazing.
Yeah.
This you just put in every black deck. It takes no work. It's not like the Daring Wave Rider. Like, I would have said those cards were comparable, the 4/4 outer that casts an instant or sorcery mana value 4 or less. Wix Patrol is way better than Daring Wave Rider.
Yeah, I buy it.
And the black decks have a lot of ways to recur stuff, too. So you benefit from the mill, and then when this dies, you can rebuy it. It's really good. Hunter's Talent, like, which green just has so many banger uncommons. The Moose, Hunter's Talent, one in a green, ETBs, target creature you control, deals damage equal to the power of target creature you don't control. You can level it up. Level 2 is your creature gets +1/+1 trample. It's also super stupid in tandem with the 6/6 Menace Death Touch from black.
Oh,
like,
God.
In the green-black squirrel decks, like, you have a 7/6 Menace Death Touch trample.
Yeah.
I ended some games in a hurry that way during early access. And then level 3 is just juice, but, like, all just gravy on an already efficient removal spell.
Right. Then, it's rabid bite with extreme upside.
Yeah. So good. You can find it off of Cash Grab. It's so strong.
That's cool. Next is Lily Splash Mentor, 2 green blue for a 4/4 frog druid with reach. And you can pay 1 green blue to exile another creature you control and return to the battlefield with a ++1 counter on it. Activate only as a sorcery. This is such like a feels like a signpost uncommon from like 6 years ago. You know, it's like shark to crab. Just like big stats, like clearly does the thing. But this one's good.
It's good. I mean, this is the reason frogs is great, right? Because games can stall out, and this helps you stall out the game. And then once the game's stalled, like just wins any board stall quite easily. And frogs are very good at stalling out the board.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really like Lily Splash Mentor. And I think it's a huge part of the reason that blue-green frogs get there. Want to touch base on the villages. I mean, we kind of had this position already of them not being great. They just don't matter. I don't think any of them matter.
I've played with the red one a fair amount. I think the red one's really good.
Like, really good?
Really good. I'm doing quotes. It's the best one. It's the one that I've found matters the most. You're not taking it highly.
Yeah, the black one, I think, could be impressive, but they're like the not being able to cast for the color of mana for non-creature spells. Correct. Is a super real cost.
Yeah, like you can't. I played it in a like near mono red deck, basically. But you just get them late. Like you don't have to take them early. But It's nice. Like it is nice to have haste and, you know, potentially the Valiant stuff didn't come up that much. But just like 2 extra mana to haste out stuff was good.
Yeah, I guess I would say like irrelevant in the sense that you don't care about whether or not you end up with them during the draft. Like you're only taking them in spots where it's free to take them. And then you're not even always including them in your deck.
Correct. Yep.
Starforged Sword next up. This is 4 mana for the artifact equipment at uncommon. You can gift your opponent a tapped fish. If you do, this gets auto equipped. Otherwise, you have to pay the equip cost, which is equip 3. And the equipped creature gets +3/+3 and loses flying. This makes your things huge, and stats do matter, I think, in this format. There's a lot of creatures that have vigilance, and there's unblockable creatures running around as well, like Starforged Sword on your stupid unblockable crab thing.
That's
and there's
cool.
The 1/4 in blue-black that becomes unblockable after you hit Threshold. Starforged Sword, I think, is a real card in the format.
Okay. Again, you don't ever have to like take it highly, right?
I think it might be good.
Like, interesting.
I think it might be worth picking. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Okay.
I think you want those other cards first, but once you have those cards, I think you're pretty interested in a Starforged Sword.
Okay. Yeah, just like looking for ways to make +3/+3 like really good. So whatever, vigilance, evasion, etc.
Yeah. Trample.
Yeah.
And lastly, Patchwork Banner. This is 3 mana for an uncommon artifact. When ETBs, choose a creature type. Creatures you control of the chosen type get +1/+1 and taps to add mana of any color. I actually kind of hate that this is in the format because like you're only playing this in a 2-color deck that got there, and those decks are already good. It's kind of like adding insult to injury. Like, yeah, cool. Your deck's awesome. You got to play Patchwork Banner to make your deck more awesome.
Is this a card worth first picking? Because like, all you're trying to do is find the open deck. And so like in a pack where like, whatever, rare, your rare's not that great. Like you just take this as like, cause it is colorless in the sense of like, it's not, you're not splashing anything, but it's going to go in whichever good 2-color deck you end up in.
Maybe you're kind of selling me on it. I don't know. I'm pretty salty about this card. I was like, several people in early access just ran up the score with the Patchwork Banner on me.
Yeah. It's definitely better in like rabbits, like where you're going wide a bit more.
Best in the white decks, I think.
Yeah.
But certainly a very strong card.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. All right. So looking to be green going into week one.
I think I'd be looking to be green going into week one. But again, with the caveat that like, I don't know, you open a black red lizard that's rare, like I think all of the decks are really truly viable. I would be trying to stay away from blue, red, and blue, white, I think. I feel like reasonably confident that that's true, but not to say that I wouldn't draft them. Like, basically, you just want to be wherever's open. I do think green's the best. I think the green X decks are going to be really strong.
Green potentially 4/4 on play booster sets.
Is that true?
It wasn't like the best, but it was we had it as number 2 in Murders at Karlov Manor, and then OTJ was nuts. Modern Horizons was nuts.
Nah, it was overrated in Modern Horizons.
Yeah, yeah. Green wasn't that good in Modern Horizons. That's the information we want to be putting out there.
All right. That's all I've got. Anything else from you?
No, I'm ready. I'm excited to... We'll have one day of respite here on Monday, and then I'm excited to dive in on Tuesday.
I have 1 week to draft this format before school starts.
Summer break, we hardly knew you.
Yeah, feels bad, man. All right, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, Salty Pretzels, for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. Links to, we've got our tier list up there, Bloomborough tier list, courtesy of Ben Wernie here, is up on our website, as well as access to our episode backlog, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively, our Patreon as well, all that stuff over at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.